Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the international break in full swing, we are taking a little break ourselves from the day job of Premier League and European previews and analysis. We're taking a dip into the cool waters of a Squawker Talker deep dive. Now, listeners to last week's podcast will have heard a little teaser for this week in what we've nicknamed the Right Back Oscars. Fullbacks have gone from being the wallflowers of football to the Swiss Army knives across all major European teams. Roy Keane's sage old words of nobody wanting to grow up to be Gary Neville may have been true once upon a time, but thanks to Trent Alexander-Arnold, etc., those days are now long gone. So the usual suspects will be included as we're looking at the different types of fullback and what makes them the best in the business, and asking the big question: can they really be compared to the greats? So to make it easy, we've chopped it up into different categories of fullback. Primarily right backs we're dealing with, but a little bit of left back because they are Swiss Army knives. We've got the playmaker fullback, the freight train, the shutdown merchant, and the accidental, almost apologetic target man fullback. So they're the categories that we're going to be working with when we look to assess the fullbacks today. So lots to get through. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me as ever, we have, I'm not going to say smug, I'm going to say data-based, satisfied chief football writer for Squawker, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how are we doing?
Look, man, when I'm right,
don't say it. Don't say it. No spoiler alerts. Don't say it.
All right. Okay. We'll see. We'll see. Let's just leave it there.
Okay. So there's no spoiler alerts at the start.
My mood is completely placid. I am neither happy nor sad, nor smug nor sad. We will simply see what we will simply see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Mo, you've always been a big believer in the numbers, and you're going to find out later on in the podcast why Mo is so pleased with himself. Alongside Mo adding some sense to the numbers, we also have Josh Williams, or better known on Twitter at Distance Covered. Josh, how are we doing?
Doing good, mate. Yeah, excited to make my debut.
Very good. Very good. Jumping straight in. Are you a right back yourself?
Am I a right back myself? No. I'm more of a forward, I think. But I can fill in when necessary.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit. That's why you might be getting yourself a nomination on the next podcast. Right, we're going to get ourselves started with the playmaker fullback, or the inverted fullback, the inverted playmaker. And based on the Premier League mode so far this season and over the last couple of seasons, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Joao Cancelo are the two that were facing up against each other. Now, a little bit of housekeeping before we start. All of the data that we're using in the podcast is from our friends at Opta, and it's based on data going all the way back to the 2018-19 season right up until the present day. If we're using any other data from any other sources, we will try and flag it up, but it's Opta that's provided us with this brilliant bank of data to work off. So the skills that you need to be a playmaker, you wouldn't really normally historically associate them with a fullback, but Alexander-Arnold and Cancelo, Mo, have torn up the rulebook. So we're going to start with chances created. You think of a playmaker, you think of them creating chances. Trent Alexander-Arnold, based on that bracket of time, is number one in Europe. 289 chances created. He's third on the per 90 minutes list, averaging 2.37. Joao Cancelo, not as high as Trent, but for a fullback, is absolutely massive. 125, creating 1.43 every 90 minutes. This is madness that we're talking about two fullbacks.
Yeah, I mean, they're both different kinds of fullbacks. They're both, but they are both playmakers, and they sort of exemplify their system, their team system of play. And they're both the children of Dani Alves, right? This is let's go back to where it all began with the playmaker fullback is Dani Alves, right? I was once having a conversation with Jonathan Wilson on Twitter, arguing with him about Maicon versus Dani Alves 10 years ago. And I was like, Dani Alves is better than Maicon. And he was like, oh, Maicon does this. I was like, if Maicon's a great right back, what would you call Dani Alves then? And he said sui generi, which is Latin, which means the first of his kind. And he's right. Dani Alves was like, he was for Sevilla. If you watched him, Sid Lowe's written so many great things about him, the one man band, Sonic the Hedgehog. He was their right back, but he was also their midfield playmaker. He would come in infield and just be their playmaker from right back, because Jesus Navas was bombing on down the flank, and Sevilla were great. Then he went to Barcelona and he basically started doing the same thing, but going wide as Lionel Messi came in. For, you know, and the fact that he's still playing, by the way, at the age of 38, he was the most incredible, ridiculous player as a fullback, and he was so unique and different to anything else that had come for him, really. You know, he didn't play it like the usual fullbacks, which we'll get to later. It's not to denigrate those guys. They're brilliant too. But Alves was such a unique player and such a unique force. And his starring role for Barcelona really sort of thrust the idea of this kind of fullback into the mainstream, right? And, you know, not everyone that's tried to do it has been good. Before we get to Trent and Cancelo, who are great, Sergio Roberto was a great example of, Barca tried to make Fetch happen, right? They tried to make Sergio Roberto happen again and again, and he didn't have the same thing Alves had. Trent Alexander-Arnold has that same thing Dani Alves has. He's a phenomenal creative force. Cancelo's a different kind of player. He was a freight train right back. He was a freight train right back at Juventus, at Valencia, wherever. City have turned him into a sort of playmaker. He doesn't have those numbers that Trent does, like you said, because he plays a sort of almost withdrawn role, just a link. Like, he plays basically central midfield for City. Like, it's not a key role. He's not making the key passes necessarily the same way that Trent does, but he's knitting the attack together. He's playing so well there that the likes of De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva can just go forward and play attacking midfield because he's playing central midfield. Phenomenal player. But Trent is the one. Trent is the most spectacular English player we've seen since, I mean, prime Gerrard, maybe prime young Rooney, you know, before the ankle injury in 2010. You know, just like, Trent is phenomenal. He's the best or second best English player alive right now. It's either him or Kane. I would imagine Kane probably is number one, but it's like, he's so good. And people don't really understand how good he is. Let me give you just an example. In the Premier League this season, right, Bruno Fernandes has expected assists of, wait for it, 5.83. Right? He's the second highest in the Premier League. That's really good. 5.83 expected assists this season. And he's having a bad season, but that's good. Trent is top. Trent has 10.86 expected assists this season. That's ridiculous. In the top five leagues, only one player has more. It's David Raum at Hoffenheim, and he's a left back or wing back. So Trent has almost double the assists, the expected assists of Bruno Fernandes, who's second best in the Premier League. And that means second best. That means Trent is more than double of Salah, more than double of De Bruyne, more than double of Cancelo, more than double of everyone. He's ridiculous, and his chances created, expected assists, every single number, and I'm sure we'll get into those in a minute, every single number or stat you can conceive of, this guy smashes it. He's an unfathomably elite player. You know, I can't believe there's even a question like that this guy should be starting for England. He should be the first or second name on the team sheet for England. He's utterly incalculably special, and it's baffling that people don't see that.
We're just going to look at some of their numbers, Josh. I'm going to throw it across to you because chances created is the thing that you automatically associate with a playmaker, whether it's this new breed of fullback playmaker or traditional kind of number 10 creative midfielder. So alongside chances created, if we look at passes into the final third based across that bracket of time, Trent is third in Europe, 1,997, averaging between 16 and 17 per 90 minutes. Cancelo gets a bit closer to him on this, 1,802, and he's third across the 90-minute spectrum, 20.5, and he beats him on the success rate, 81% to 65. But then when you go back out again to this real idea of impacting the attacking output of your team, and obviously Liverpool with Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's again top of the shop for penalty area entries, 1,503, and he's also top when you track that over 90 minutes, 12.3 per 90 minutes based across that bracket of seasons, and we're still talking about a right back with number 66 on his back.
Yeah, I mean, he is really, really special. I think he's different to anything I've seen before as a fullback, certainly. When it comes to Dani Alves, you know, he was kind of, I'd say maybe his peak was maybe around 12 years ago. And the Dani Alves I kind of remember was, I think he was a bit more, not traditional, but I think he was inclined to impose his physical traits more than Trent. I think he was a bit more of a dribbler than Trent. I think Trent is a bit more in the mould of just a quarterback almost. And I think he's redefining what the role means. He's occupying spaces that have always been, you know, the safe spaces on the pitch from the perspective of an opposing team, and, you know, where you defend, you traditionally block the centre of the pitch. So those fullback areas have you know, historically been the areas where you just kind of funnel possession towards, and once the possession gets there, you're safe. But Trent is redefining it, and, you know, you've mentioned there that he's creating chances, but he's also kind of ticking the progression box as well. He kind of does it all, really. You know, the switches of play, the ability to get the ball from A to B into valuable areas, the ability to create chances for other players, set pieces, you know, his execution from free kicks is right up there as well. So, you know, and then on top of all that, you consider his age and the fact that he's playing for a club that he came through the academy. It's such a unique case, such a unique player. And, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to get to the point as to whether he's generational or not, but I think for me, a generational player...
He's generational, man. Unquestioned.
Yeah, well, I agree, mate. I think a generational player for me is someone who maybe makes you redefine what you thought was normal and someone who redefines the expectations of a certain role. And I think Trent is having that effect. I think he's changing the perception of what it means to be a fullback and what you're supposed to deliver as a fullback as well.
Let me ask you a question though, mate. Let me ask you a question because I do, like I said, they are all the children of Dani Alves, all these new playmaker fullbacks, because he was the first one to do it. And they all do it in different, I'm not saying they all do it in different ways, their own ways. Trent, right? Would you liken him? And this is what I've always thought. Is he not like having Beckham at right back?
Like, it's exactly like having Beckham.
Like 6 foot Beckham who's a bit, obviously Trent is not a great defender, but he's a physically strong defender. He can do it if he has to. But like the way he just gets the ball, and like you said, in positions where you're thinking, yeah, that's fine, he can have the ball there, and he just curves some ridiculous like geometric wonder like around like three defenders, and it's like, oh yeah, Mane heads it in, scores a goal, and his ability to cross the ball with very little backlift and without needing to beat a man first to do it. It's just like I said, Beckham is the last guy I saw do that consistently from right wing, just absolutely. Ping every time, different angles, different positions. It's not always the same cross, but his ability to do it is just unparalleled. And it's like, this is why he's so dangerous. Because like Josh says, you know, he's standing in spaces where you're thinking he can have the ball there. He's not going to kill us there, but he can kill you from there. He can kill you from there. He's like a sniper, but he's not even the one taking a shot. He's a sniper spotter. He's standing there going, okay, yeah, he's standing right there. Hey, you shoot him there. And then Mane comes in with the 50 cal. You know, or Salah comes in with a 50 cal and just bang, bang, bang. And everything's powderized brain matter. It's just ridiculous. You watch Liverpool, and when he doesn't play, they can play literally everyone else in their first team, but without Trent, and they're half as good as a team. And that's not to knock anyone else. Liverpool are a fantastic side. You know, everyone knows that I've respect Liverpool immensely. But Trent is just... like, generated, like, no one, I mean, generational, yeah. Like, people need to be talking about, like, is he actually going to match Alves in terms of achievements? Because that's how good he is. He could do that if he keeps his level up, obviously. It's very difficult. Dani Alves, his longevity has been part of the reason why he is the greatest right back of all time. Trent could rival that if he keeps this up. He's so ridiculously good.
Josh, this is where it comes back to with perceptions in terms of Trent, and both in a positive sense and in a negative sense, because we've talked about so much of the positives that are connected with him. But despite the fact that we are talking about someone that does, as you said, essentially redefine this role, whether he's a generational talent or not, he's still got a long career ahead of him to probably answer that question in full. But it is truly incredible that we're talking about somebody that has got the output of a midfielder, that's got the attacking intent of a forward, but a good 50% of the coverage and the conversation and on social media about Trent is this alleged lack of defensive ability. And it doesn't really matter how many numbers you throw around about him. Is he essentially doomed to be dogged by this for the rest of his career? Because the real football heads are always going to point about that time, I don't know, Ashley Barnes beat him in a header in 2018, and they'll never forget that. Despite the fact that the numbers do completely speak for themselves, people have already made their mind up on him due to a perception that's just not backed up by anything.
I don't think it's going away, and I think it stems from the traditional perspective of what English tactics are. And I think, you know, it's kind of like having a go at De Bruyne for not defending enough, or having a go at Beckham back in his day for not defending enough or not defending to a certain level. Because Trent is essentially that player for Liverpool. It's just a case of the way the system works. And, you know, when Liverpool are in a possession, Henderson's essentially the right back a lot of the time, and Trent becomes that midfield player who's playing as an eight, operating in the half spaces and things like that. So I think it's traditional, you know, perspectives maybe that really bring Trent down in terms of viewing him as a fullback, and, you know, the old school line that a fullback is his first job is to defend and all that sort of stuff. It really depends, depending on the system and the confines that you're playing within. And he's got so much more responsibility than engaging in 1v1 battles. And what I will say as well, in terms of his defending, a lot of the time he's, you know, defending on the turn, or he's playing in a transition, things like that, defending in transition. It's really difficult for very, very rarely is he settled in like a you know, a block where he's able to benefit from coverage around him and from small spaces. A lot of the time he's put in difficult positions where he's on the move and he's up against really tricky forwards who are already in behind him, and because of his responsibility to get up in the final third and stuff. So it's a difficult position for him to be in. But as I said, it's like it's as flawed in my opinion as having a go at De Bruyne for being defensively a bit weak, because it's the same kind of thing really for me.
It's a reductive kind of perspective on it all. Josh, I just want to throw back to you before we move on to the next section. Mo has said that he thinks if Trent continues on this path, he is in a position to challenge Dani Alves. And we've maybe been a bit Trent heavy in terms of Cancelo. Some of the consistency output Cancelo has edged him, but also perceptions. Cancelo doesn't have to deal with those comments that Trent does, despite the fact that he doesn't play in a kind of 1980s, 1990s fullback role. Do you think, again, that's perceptions, that the narrative has just been built around Trent, and it doesn't really matter what he does, what he achieves, what he wins? João Cancelo is basically doing the same, but in the blue of Manchester City instead of the red of Liverpool, and he's not getting the same level of attention.
Well, I also think that it's generally maybe easier to defend as a fullback for Manchester City, because I think City are a lot more inclined to form a block if you break their initial press. And I think because of their general style of play, the short passes and short tight spaces, you've always kind of got a player around the ball, a number of players around the ball, you've got support. And I think Cancelo is just, I think he's presented with easier situations to manage really than Trent. Trent, Liverpool's football is a lot more chaotic than Manchester City's, a lot more it's a lot more like basketball at times. I think Liverpool have moved away from that gradually, but it's still more in that mould than Manchester City's is. But I don't think it's in that sense needs to particularly worry about, to be honest.
Right, we're going to move on to the next section of the right back analysis. Freight trains. You can't knock down a freight train. You can try and knock Trent Alexander-Arnold down, but you can't knock down a freight train. The human equivalent, or the fight footballing or right-back equivalent of a freight train, Mo. I'm so pleased that Jake flagged this up as the example of the legend freight train, Cafu, because he's one of my all-time favourites, an absolute legend of a player. So he's the legend that we're looking to hold up as the pinnacle, and the current contemporaries that we're throwing around as the examples of freight trains are Reece James and Achraf Hakimi for Paris Saint-Germain. So it's a different skill set to the playmaker, and it's definitely going to be a different skill set to the shutdown defensive fullback that we're going to talk about a bit later. This is about an ability to get the ball and just bomb up and down, back and forward, up and down. So the stats that we're looking at for this are touches in the opposition box, take-ons completed, and dribbling. So Reece James, pretty strong in this area. We know he's had his injury issues this season, but Achraf Hakimi, from basically turning down Real Madrid's contract to going to Inter Milan to then making the big move to PSG, he's gone from strength to strength to strength. And as a freight train, as an unstoppable freight train, he's a big, strong candidate.
I mean, yeah, he is. And to go back to Cafu, the reason why I've always says these fullbacks are kind of fullbacks are freight trains, ironically, of course, Cafu's nickname, appropriately, not ironically, his nickname is Il Pendolino, which is an express train. So he literally was nicknamed the express train because he would go up and down, up and down, up and down. And that's the defining aspect of fullback. I use freight train because it's more evocative and it sounds better to say, and it sounds more intense, which is it. But, you know, obviously, in practice, Pendolinos are fast and freight trains are not fast. But anyway, essentially, Cafu is the ideal, right? And this is, anyone remembers Cafu, or Javier Zanetti is another great example back in the day, the 90s style fullback. This is what, and Maicon was a great example. And this is why the likes of Trent and Dani Alves often get knocked down, because they're compared to these guys who are up and down, up and down, up and down in straight lines. Like their heat maps are just these very thin, very intensely coloured lines up on the side of the pitch, because that's what they do. They get up and down, up and down. and they defend very well and they attack very well. But obviously their attacking is the basic kind of fullback attacking, where they get into the box, they provide little crosses, little passes across, cutbacks, score goals, take shots at goal, stuff like that. So in that instance, you know, they are huge parts of their team's attacks, but it's, you know, it's not the same. But it is still deadly effective. It's like Cafu and Zanetti, I said, great examples. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, Hakimi is the great instance. Reece James, I think, is an interesting case because in many ways he doesn't appear to be a freight train because he can play central midfield, he can play center, right side of center back. You're thinking, this guy's a playmaker. But then you watch him play on the wing as a wing back and he's just a pure freight train, just runs up and down, very orthodox. He's fantastic. He's already got, what, five goals this season as a right back? No fullback has more. And he's been injured like half the season. So, you know, he's really special, but Hakimi is the one. Hakimi is the Don Dada. I can't wrap my head around why Real Madrid sold him. Because you look at Dani Carvajal, you look at Lucas Vazquez, and you're thinking, you guys need a right back. You had literally one of the next great right backs in the world on your team come through your youth system. Why did you sell him? What's wrong with you? It's very strange. He was so good at Dortmund on loan from Real Madrid. It was just like, why would you then sell him? It doesn't make any sense. And yeah, Hakimi's amazing. Since 2018-19, he's had 363 touches in the opposition box. That's more than any right back. He's attempted 288 take-ons, ridiculous amount of take-ons, and he scored 17 goals. You know, he's 17 goals as a right back. And he doesn't take set pieces, he doesn't take penalties, he doesn't take free kicks. He's really quite great. I mean, Mbappe famously shouted him out as the best right back in the world. Not sure about that, Killian, but he's really good. He's so spectacular to watch.
I think if Mbappe does go to Liverpool this summer, maybe he might have himself a little rethink. But we'll leave that for the transfer gossip merchants. Josh, do you think, again, this is a little bit of a perception argument? We talked about Trent and Cancelo before, and the comparisons with Alves. James and Hakimi are maybe edging back to more the traditional model. As Mo said, this idea that the heat map is generally, not to be disingenuous, a fairly straight line of, I am quicker than the person in front of me, I'm probably quicker than my opposite fullback, I can power past them, I can get crosses into the box, I can impact the game due to my ability to carry the ball progressively over long distances. Reece James has shown that to good effect. He's obviously had a couple of injury issues this season, but Achraf Hakimi with PSG is an outstanding example of how that type of fullback can still flourish in 2022.
Yeah, well, I think this is more of the traditional way we view fullbacks, you know, being good both ways. And traditionally as well, I think a fullback has always been a very physical player, you know, very physically good in terms of having that engine to get up and down all day, having the engine to showcase a bit of recovery pace when caught high up the field, having the energy to overlap and underlap. And I think these are more in the mould of what we would traditionally view as really top elite fullbacks. But having said that, I do think that these players, I do think that they're gradually being influenced by the likes of Trent and by Cancelo, because I do think James and Hakimi do have that. I mean, 10 years ago, we would probably be talking about them in a similar way to we're talking about Trent now, maybe, in terms of their ability on the ball, but particularly the passing ability. Reece James is so comfortable in possession, his first touch is flawless, and his delivery into the box in terms of crosses is really, really dangerous at times. It's maybe not as difficult to defend as Trent, but in terms of him being an attacking, you know, outlet for his team to use, he's absolute top quality. So I think these fullbacks are kind of, I mean, very, very similar across the board anyway. But these are more in the traditional mould, very, very physical. But then also you've got to combine that with the modern influence of how the role's developed tactically and how it's become more of a playmaking role. I think they're gradually adopting elements of that.
Do you think, again, we keep talking about perceptions, Mo, in terms of the way these fullbacks are measured or measured against each other. The playmaker idea of Trent and Cancelo, and then this freight train idea of James and Hakimi. When you stretch out some of the numbers in terms of what it means to be a fullback currently in 2022, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as the old expression goes. And some data that we've got from FB Ref illustrates that. That's just based on this season. As a Premier League defender, nobody has a higher dribble success rate than Reece James. He's top 74%, not just fullbacks, any defender, including a progressive centre-back. And then Hakimi in Ligue 1 is the top defender for touches in the opposition box and for progressive passes. So from passing from the defensive half into the attacking half. Trent and Cancelo are fantastic at what they do, but when you're playing against a multitude of different defensive systems, you need a fullback that's able to do different things to break them down. If you're dealing with a low block or you're dealing with a high press, you need different ways to break through and impact the game.
It all depends on what system of play you decide to go with as a team, right? This is the thing. So, for example, I don't think Trent would be very good in Chelsea's system because Chelsea's system is wingbacks, right? And so that would mean Trent would, it would automatically start the match higher up the pitch. There'd be fewer spaces that he likes to roam into to really function, right? He could do it, but it wouldn't be quite as effective. Whereas I think someone like Reece James really benefits from being in as a wing back. It lets him get forward with a lot more confidence. I mean, he can still defend and everything, but it lets him have a lot more attacking confidence. And look at PSG. PSG is a great example of what's something that should really work brilliantly, but doesn't really, but it should do. Like Messi playing on the right, it should be tailor-made for a fullback that just hurtles down the line beyond him, getting into the box, which Hakimi does. And Hakimi does well, but it hasn't, obviously because PSG have had their own issues this season, it hasn't really clicked. And I think that's another reason, by the way, why Hakimi hasn't been more lauded. Because, again, as much as I think Trent is the, you know, the absolute gold standard, Hakimi is the best freight train style fullback that there is, opposed to where the freight trains, absolutely. But, and he would be much more highly regarded if he didn't play for PSG, who no one really watched or care about, or even like. So apologies to you if you are a PSG fan, but it's true. And, you know, so it's a shame, really, because Trent is phenomenal. He's genuinely, like, when you watch him run, he's built like, I don't even know what he's built like. There's no footballers that are built like that. He's massive, but he's built like a sprinter, Olympic sprinter. He looks like, you know, he could run the 100 meters. Probably could run the 100 meters in very, very good time. Sub 10, I would imagine, at least. He's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, right. We're going to move on. The Hakimi hype train, or the Hakimi freight train, we're going to let it pull out of the station and we're going to move on to our next section. Right, so we're going to move on to part three. Now, Josh, you can take a break here because this is what Mo's been waiting for. And I'm big enough and mature enough to... yeah, admit when I was wrong, or at least not considered in my views on this. And Mo, you were right all along, because part three is the shutdown corner, the defensive fullback, locked down, a corner of the pitch just owned defensively. And surprise, surprise, your boy Aaron Wan-Bissaka is the subject of this one. Now, his numbers are so fantastic that we've not actually got someone to put up in comparison to him. So this is just going to be a few minutes of Mo eulogising about Wan-Bissaka. So I'm going to throw some of the numbers at you in terms of what he's done this based on this 18-19 bracket. He is top in Europe for tackles made, 384. He's top for interceptions, 241, at an average of just under 2 per 90 minutes. And he's top of the shop for duels won, 747. Mo, I'm going to throw the floor over. Go for it.
Look, let's bring it back to the start. Who is the paradigm of the defensive fullback? Well, I think one of them is Gary Neville. One of them, a recent ones. Obviously, you can go back to the great Brazilian teams, and originally fullbacks were the last line defense and so on and so forth. But modern era, Gary Neville is a great example, right? He was a defender. You know, Ferguson once famously said if he was an inch taller, he'd be the best centre back in Britain, right? He was a phenomenal defender, really rugged defensive fullback. He could attack, he could get forward and overlap occasionally, but he wasn't known for these lung-busting runs. He just left that. He always said, you know, he left that generally to Beckham or Kanchelskis or latterly Cristiano Ronaldo. He would just stay back there and defend his flank, and he would do a really good job. You couldn't get past him, you know, whether by fair or foul, just ask Arsenal, he would stop you. And it's funny because I think the two best examples of the shutdown corner, the modern shutdown corner, are in Manchester with Kyle Walker and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Now, we mentioned Walker earlier. I mentioned part of the reason why Cancelo is playing left back, despite being a brilliant, brilliant right back, is because Walker's playing right back. And Walker can't play left back, and Cancelo can play left back. So that's the difference. Walker is phenomenal. At Spurs under Pochettino, he was a freight train. He was just up and down, and he was this archetypal, okay, Walker's great. Walker and Rose, remember they had those two fullbacks, phenomenal. Danny Rose and Kyle Walker. But now, and at City, he's become different. He's been used differently by Pep. He's basically a shutdown. He's a defensive player. They like I said, he starts in the half space, in midfield, essentially, when City have the ball. And he doesn't really get involved too much in attack. Occasionally, he'll get forward and get involved. Mostly, he stays back. And his job is to protect against transitions because he's got ridiculous pace. And he's got great defensive instincts when Pep is in his ear yapping at him all the time. And he gets back and he covers. And he does a really, really good job helping his team out. And then another good example is Benjamin Pavard over in Bayern Munich, who was a centre-back originally, moved to full-back just because they were like, why not? And he, you know, won the World Cup there. So Bayern have kept playing him there as well because Bayern don't really have a right-back because they moved Kimmich into midfield. And just before we get to my my victory parade, I want to mention other two guys in London. Cesar Azpilicueta is a fantastic defensive right-back for years. Has been, obviously came through, he was originally, again, another one, he was originally a freight train. Then when he went to Chelsea, Pep got it, Jose Mourinho, sorry, used him as a defensive left back. And everyone was thinking, huh, what are you doing? And he was really good at it. And then he moved to the right, played right centre back, played right wing back, right back, straight up. Whatever he plays, he does it defensively and he's really, really good. For a guy who isn't exactly massively tall, he's won 253 aerial duels. You know, since the start of 2018-19, only two right backs have more than that. That's really impressive for a short guy. Well, a short guy, average height guy. And the other one that there's not really going to be much numbers on because he's very new, Takehiro Tomiyasu over at Arsenal. Very, very good right back. Very solid defensive right back. And you can see the difference in Arsenal's play when he's there versus when he's not. And I'll tell you something, if he was there against Liverpool in that recent game, that game ends 0-0. Those two goals, Liverpool goals, came because Tomiyasu wasn't there to defend that flank and Liverpool picked on that. Anyway, Wan-Bissaka. Look, if you know Wan-Bissaka, you watched him play, you know he's ridiculous, right? He's been completely utterly failed by the coaching at Man United. He was being undercoached for years. His confidence got absolutely wrecked. Ralf Rangnick came in. Rangnick doesn't play asymmetrical fullback. He doesn't play asymmetric fullback. So the right back has to be able to attack and really be confident on the ball and be able to drive forward. Wan-Bissaka is not a great attacker. He's an average attacker, maybe even below average. His passing is really spotty and shoddy. His crossing is hit and miss. He's a great dribbler. He's a very good dribbler, but that's about it. He doesn't take up good attacking positions. He's not great at attacking, right? But that doesn't matter because he's not an attacker. He's a shutdown corner. He is the most ridiculous one-on-one defender I think I've ever seen. Like he could be an Italian center back. That's how good he is at one-on-one defending. Like, he's just utterly absurd. And this is a guy who, if you've watched him play, he's taken on Mbappe and Neymar in the same game and shut them both down, right? He ran them both off that flank. Like, they both tried to run at him and they couldn't get past him and they ran off the flank. And of course, hilariously, famously, Man United at Old Trafford, Neymar ran off the left flank to get away from Mbappe, from Wan-Bissaka, and then just dished up Harry Maguire a couple of times to give PSG a very big win, Champions League, if you recall that a couple of years ago. But Wan-Bissaka, his like you said, the numbers are there. Most tackles, most interceptions. His clearances is really good, 278 as well. His true tackle success rate, which is the amount of times he wins the ball, his true tackle success rate is by far like the highest. It's 77.8%. Let me see, 78.5% true tackle success rate, which is highest among all fullbacks. I think only a few other players have higher, none of them are fullbacks. He's genuinely special as a defensive player, and he's been utterly failed by Man United and their coaching. And the numbers back it up, as you say, which is great. Hurrah, hurrah. But I'm not interested in being smug because honestly, I'm just sad that he's been failed. No, it's true because he's I've been saying for years, he's someone who is a genuinely special, unique skill set, right? And he's not being protected, not being put into the system. Look at Trent. Trent could very easily have bombed out of anyway. If he'd been at a different club, or even if he'd been at a Liverpool prior to Klopp, he could have very easily bombed out because he's like, oh, this guy's no fullback. He can't defend at all. He's rubbish. Oh, look, he's not even a midfielder either. He's not really very, you know, you could easily see how someone with a unique skill set like Trent could be neglected just enough that it knocks his confidence and then he's doesn't become rubbish, but like it's not the same, right? Wan-Bissaka, when he came to United at first, was just utterly unreal. And he's had his confidence slowly chipped away by everyone saying, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't attack, you can't. And then obviously he, under Solskjaer, this start of the season, he was one of the people who had really suffered, had a really bad start of the season. And his confidence is just shot now. And obviously, Rangnick doesn't like defensive fullbacks. He needs asymmetric fullbacks. So he's got no chance. But you look at what Pep does with Walker, what Arteta does with Tomiyasu. You know, you look at these guys and you think, why can't you do that with even to an extent, what Real Madrid did with Danny Carvajal for years before Carvajal's legs went with injury. He was, okay, he could attack, but he was also a phenomenal, very dogged, rugged defender. Gave Madrid's defense loads of personality. And you think, well, why couldn't Wan-Bissaka do that for Man United? Because Man United are coached by, or Man United run like a circus, basically. And they've failed basically every player that's walked through the doors since Sir Alex Ferguson left in 2013. But Wan-Bissaka is one of the most egregious examples of them failing a player.
Before we go on to the last section, Josh, I just want to ask you a bit again about Wan-Bissaka and this idea of a shutdown defender, because strangely, he's also a victim of perception, because Trent is a victim of perception in the sense of this narrative that he can't defend, he's a dreadful defender, he gets caught out all the time. Whereas you've got Wan-Bissaka, that the numbers are here right in front of your face to suggest what an excellent one-on-one defender he is. He defends space very well, he defends people trying to get past him very well, he's very aggressive and very maybe basic in his defending, but he defends the situation. There is clearly still room for a fullback like that in 2022, but there is this weird idea that no fullback is good enough for this dream fullback that's been created. Trent's too attacking, Wan-Bissaka's too defensive. What do people want?
Well, it's difficult, and I think it depends a lot on the club. I think it depends a lot on the coach. Like, I think one of the reasons behind Wan-Bissaka's struggles is he's gone to a club that obviously they're very dysfunctional and a little bit all over the place, but in addition to that, they have aspirations to play football like Liverpool or to play football like Manchester City. And I think it's difficult with these shutdown fullbacks to have, you know, a team of 11 players and one of them is kind of a bit of a negative on the ball. Like, if you think of the Europa League final, I think it was the final a few years ago, Manchester United against Villarreal. Villarreal's whole game plan was basically to funnel the ball towards Wan-Bissaka because he wasn't going to hurt them. And I think when you're playing in such an offensive way, it really helps when you're the favourites, which Manchester United are probably going to be in the large majority of games, to have, you know, players across the board all over the pitch who can play the last pass. And I think Wan-Bissaka is not really that. I don't think he's ever really going to be that either. I think his dribbling is certainly decent, but other than that, I think offensively he does have quite a limited skill set. So I think if he's going to play for a top club that are going to win the biggest honours, I think it would have to be for like an Atletico Madrid or a team like that, as opposed to a team that are going to dominate possession, a team that are going to play really offensive football, high pressing and generating wave after wave of attack and things like that. So it just depends. But I do think that when it comes to what you're saying there in terms of unrealistic expectations almost, I do agree with you. I think it's really difficult now to tick every box. Very few players across the board tick every box. One player who I think you could argue does, albeit he's not a fullback, is Van Dijk. I think Van Dijk does kind of everything you need from a typical modern centre back, and as a result of that, he receives very good publicity. So maybe that's proof that when a player does kind of achieve that in his game, he does get praised for it. And people do flag his minor mistakes whenever they materialise, but generally he is praised. So I think if Trent's defensive game was maybe not even Wan-Bissaka's level, if it was the level of maybe Reece James, I think Trent would probably see a lot less criticism going his way for his defensive game.
Right, we're going to let Wan-Bissaka's agent take a quick break. I can hear the phone ringing. Real Madrid are going to be looking to take him this summer. So we're going to move on. We're going to take a little quick mini break and we're going to move on to the final section. Right, so the final section of the podcast today is a little bit more lighthearted. There is obviously numbers backing it up. We've gone for what I've labelled as the accidental target man or the accidental centre-forward fullback. And the best example, Josh, that we've pulled up for this, particularly based on Premier League numbers, is Tottenham's Matt Doherty. Obviously, coming from Wolves, he was very successful under Nuno Santo. He was then managed by Nuno Santo at Spurs. Didn't really work with Jose Mourinho, but under Antonio Conte, things are starting to change for him. So just throwing it back to the metrics again from 18-19 up to the present day, he is the second highest defender in the Premier League for touches in the opposition box. 248, he averages just under 3 per 90 minutes. Aerial duels won, top of the shop in the whole of Europe, which is massively impressive, 342, and he's top in the Premier League based across 90 minutes at 3.85. And then when we look at this oddity of, oh my God, I'm a right back, I'm in front of goal, I'll get a shot off and I might get a goal, Matt Doherty's right up there with Trent. He's actually second in the Premier League, only to Trent, with 40 shots on target based on that metric. This is an odd hybrid of all these roles that we've been talking about, but Matt Doherty's actually the best at it.
Yeah, I think he's a very interesting player. I liked him during his time at Wolves, actually. I think he's a very, very, very specialist player when it comes to this kind of role. Another few that come to mind as well for me was he's a left-back, but Marcos Alonso ticks the box of a tall full-back slash wing-back, if you like, who you can use in different ways. A while back as well, Dan Byrne played as a left-back for Brighton. He's one of the tallest players in the league, but he's good on the ball, and you can use him in certain different ways. So I do think it's quite a rare profile to come across. But I think it's interesting. And when Conte first came in, actually, I did think it was probably a matter of time before Matt Doherty started to play more often, simply because in terms of what Conte wants from his wing-backs, I think Doherty ticks those boxes, even though he's not blessed with the most quality. Emerson Royale's probably a better player overall. But in terms of what Conte requires for a certain role, I think Doherty was quite well suited, and I think you can say the same on the opposite flank for Sessegnon. So I think a recurring theme maybe of this podcast really has been, you know, different systems and different players being suited to different scenarios, basically, and being adjusting tactics around that. And I think if you've got a player like this, it's a really interesting profile to have, but it's one that you can use, and I think Conte's proven that.
And Mo, this again comes back to this idea of there's more than one way to break through an opposition defence, and Doherty, in the way that he plays, particularly at Wolves, we're now starting to see a bit of that at Spurs, this idea that the big switch from Dier or Romero or Bentancourt, Doherty as a presence forces the opposition left-back or left-wing-back to go back, engage in an aerial duel, which based on the numbers, Doherty will win. That then brings a new phase of play into action, whether it's Kulusevski or Kane. And it is a different way of doing things. There's maybe a little bit of negative connotation that it's a bit old school and it's a bit meat and spuds, but actually it's based on numbers, that if you've got a player that is capable at doing these things, then maximise it. He's not bending the rules, it's not dark arts or anything like that. He's just very, very effective in a completely different way than the other names we've mentioned.
Yeah, it's both finding a strength in your team and a weakness in opponents. Fullbacks generally aren't great in the air because they're fullbacks. They don't usually have to do that. Centre-backs usually defend in the air. And most fullbacks aren't tall either. They're quite short. So, you know, you have a guy who bombs forward and is great in the air, launch balls up to him, and he can win them against fullbacks. Like you say, it's almost like someone's drawing it up on a spreadsheet. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel like an old school kind of vibe, even though it is an old school style of knock it long and win it header with the big man. It feels like someone said, oh, you know what? We've noticed that a lot of fullbacks lose or only win X percent of aerial duels, and they're all usually under like 6 foot tall. Doherty is like, what is he, 6 foot, 6 foot one? And he's great in the air. Why don't we just start bombing him forward and chucking long balls up to him? I mean, it might have been that. It might just have been a coincidence. I don't know, but it feels like a smart sort of way. Like you said, there's so many ways you can be a fullback, being being a very good elite attacking fullback, being a very dangerous attacking fullback. And, you know, Doherty has found a way to do it himself, a unique way, unique to him. Well, not unique to him, but he's one of the best at it. Maybe in the future, again, you'll see other tall fullbacks who are very good in the air. Maybe you'll have a centre-back who, for whatever reason, maybe he's a bit extra quick or something, maybe he gets pushed out to right back for whatever reason. He could start doing that. He could start winning aerial duels. You know, it's a thing you can do. You know, if you find a way to maximise a player you've got, maximise some talent you have, and minimise or capitalise on the strength and weakness of the opponent, why wouldn't you do it? You know what I mean? So it makes sense that Conte's now starting to do that. Like just before, like when he had Kandreva at wing back at Inter, he would just give it to Kandreva and Kandreva would just spam crosses into the box because Kandreva was an amazing crosser of the ball. right? And then when he had Hakimi, Hakimi wasn't spamming crosses. Hakimi was running into the box and getting into the box. Hakimi, by the way, could be a good target, man. He's quite tall. I want, you know, if you start lobbing crosses up to him, he might be able to start winning them as well. So there could be some there. Doherty could have a challenger for his crown, maybe.
Yeah, well, we'd have to create two double sections. We can't have anyone winning two sections. Apologies to Matt Doherty. We took an inch off you before. Matt Doherty is 6'2", so apologies about that. No one likes to be called shorter than they actually are. Right, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. I think the big two takeaways are, in the least surprising news that anyone has ever heard, Trent Alexander-Arnold is an absolutely unbelievable machine of a footballer. But in the biggest surprise news, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is actually quite good. No, scratch that. The most surprising news is, Mo, you being right. That's the most surprising news. I'll caveat that. You being right is the most surprising news. I'm still in shock. I'm going to deep dive into this. I'm going to check that you haven't fiddled the spreadsheet. But for now, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is an absolute defensive machine until further notice. Right, Josh, Mo, as always on the Squawker Talker podcast, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, mate.
Great stuff indeed. Thanks so much for listening. As always, if you hit subscribe up the top, you can get access to a brand new episode. Every week, we will be here talking about, probably not Aaron Wan-Bissaka, but if Mo's on, yeah, it will be Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But we'll be back next week talking about something else that may or may not involve Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.